That's the end of the first half. As the teams head to the locker room, the Spartans lead the Bulldogs by a score.
You guys stink.
Jeez, Coach, we're only down a couple of points.
No, I mean you guys really smell. You need to hit the showers. And here, I got every one of you new bars of soap from the Sterling Soap Company. Each bar is artisan crafted using natural ingredients and essential oils. They also have shave soaps, colognes, beard balm, and a whole lot more. Now get in there.
But Coach, we have another half to play.
I don't care. I can't stand to be around you.
A few minutes later.
All right, bring it in tight. You guys are still playing terrible, but you're smelling great out there. Now listen, you're going to need to stock up for the rest of the season. We got a lot of tough games left. So go to sterlingsoap.com after the game. That's S-T-I-R-L-I-N-G soap.com. You got that?
Yes, Coach.
Great. sterlingsoap.com on three. One, two, three.
sterlingsoap.com.
Tonight, we'll go back in time to seasons past, when 22 men graced the record fields of yesterday, fighting for one more first down, one more yard gain, one final score that would bring victory after 60 minutes of battle on the gridiron. Tonight, we'll explore the world of gridiron greats. Welcome to Gridiron Greats, football history and its memorabilia on the Sports History Network, in conjunction with Swick Enterprises, and we're live from the Southport, North Carolina home of Gridiron Greats Magazine. I'm Bob Swick, publisher and editor of Gridiron Greats Magazine, and I'll be your host for the show. Gridiron Greats is the only publication in North America which focuses upon the history and memorabilia of the North American football game since its inception in 1869. We cover 150-plus years of football history and memorabilia, and you can find us on the web at gridirongreatsmagazine.com. It is at this time I'd like to introduce my co-host, the senior contributing writer to Gridiron Greats Magazine, a football memorabilia historian specializing in pre-World War II items, in particular Red Grange, and also Seattle Seahawk items, in particular Steve Largent. He hails from Portland, Oregon, Mr. Joe Squires. Joe, welcome to the...
Good morning, Bob. Morning, I think Joe. That literally, not to call it out, but I think that's the first time I've ever heard you stumble on your introduction.
I know. I have a scratchy throat. I just cannot get rid of it.
Yeah.
For 2 weeks. It's been off and on.
Yeah.
But the show must go on, as we know.
Yeah, you were texting me. You and Brenda were pretty ill over the holidays. I'm sorry to hear that, and her birthday, too.
We had a whole plan of events for her birthday, which was the 17th, and we have to cancel every event that we had planned for that week. So it's been a lack of better way of saying it, a blah holiday season at the Southport, North Carolina compound.
Still doesn't roll off the tongue like Wallingford.
I know.
We'll take it.
And it feels like Wallingford here. It's 40 degrees today. And
oh, wow.
Bitter cold, and I have like 3 sweaters on right now.
Oh boy, you've become acclimated to South Carolina.
I can't get warm when it gets cold down here.
Yeah,
in the old days, 25 below zero, I'd be outside shoveling with my jacket and just a flannel shirt underneath type of thing, and have no problem. Yeah, yeah. And here, you know, I got layer upon layer of clothing because it's so cold. But anyways.
Yeah.
We know on any given Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, the dollar sign NFL could bring something different. And the playoffs will be decided, uniquely enough, on the last weekend of the month.
Yeah. Pretty cool. The NFC playoff picture, anyways.
And a team out of Washington that you hold dear to your heart is right up there. Could be number one. And it's so interesting for me to watch Seattle now and not see Pete Carroll on the sidelines.
Yeah.
And it's such a lack of a better way of saying it, disturbance seeing him for the Raiders on the sideline.
Oh,
just totally lost. I could just read his mind. He's just saying, why did I ever agree to this? Is the money really worth what I'm going through here in Las Vegas?
Are we all pretty sure poor Pete Carroll's going to get fired?
I would hope he would have be smart enough to realize he needs to walk away. Just negotiate something, walk out, say this was not a good fit. This is not going to work out. You need somebody else, and that's it. And I just got a feeling. I don't think the Raiders are that bad of a team, but they obviously really tune Pete Carroll out during the game and probably practices or whatever. And he's a rah-rah guy. He's a positive thinker. He's a Zen man. I get all that stuff, but it works with some players, and a lot of players it doesn't work. I mean, I remember New England, he got really tuned out, when he was coach.
He is an absolute player, coach. I mean,
Right.
that's good in some things and not in others. I mean, he can motivate people, he can get them going, but on the flip side of that, when the going gets tough, they're here they are.
Right.
I just feel bad for him because I mean, once you know it, I mean, it's like.
I mean, he's lost the team completely, and it's sad for a guy. And again, I can empathize with him because I'm older too. I get it. You're in a career your entire life. You're fighting for that one more victory, that one more taste of turning a team around type of thing. And it's just not going to happen with the Raiders and Pete Carroll. He would have been much better off. He would have been so much better off going to a mid-sized college program, take it over, spend 3 years, let him have winning seasons, go out on a high note
Dating
instead
a 27-year-old cheerleader.
yeah a 2-15 note, which is what he's going out with. And again, to me, and it's been a topic of conversation down here, Bill Belichick, I have no clue what he was thinking taking over UNC and just making a complete and utter fool out of himself this whole season. And he's not well loved anymore down, contrary to what his own mind and his girlfriend think and some boosters think. But he is just the wrong guy at the wrong time. And I tell you, if he starts off with like a, even if it's going to be like a 2-4 or 3-3 beginning of the season next year, I got a feeling he's going to be long gone. I really do. The
It's
cup's
tough. Does something like this tarnish Hoodie's record? I mean, like, do you? Okay, I wanted to go back one. Like, when I see Pete Carroll on the sidelines of the Raiders, all I have is love for Pete Carroll. He brought the Lombardi Trophy to Seattle, and for that, I will forever be grateful. You were around when Lombardi went on to coach, the Redskins, and he famously said Sonny Jurgensen was the most talented quarterback you'd ever had.
Right.
Did that make you angry to see Lombardi pacing the sidelines for the Redskins, or were you like,
Oh
hey, that's my
yeah.
coach?
Yeah, it really bothered me because I really felt he, and for him to make that statement about Jurgensen
Sonny
over,
J.
Bart Starr, I mean, I'm like saying, well, okay, and again, it was a miscommunication between the Packers and Lombardi. Lombardi should have just came right out and said to the Packers, "I need lifetime security financially for my family." The Packers would have given it to him. He could have been easily the president of the Packers and probably lived longer instead of going back to the grind, end up getting the cancer, so on and so forth. And that's his place in football history. But yeah, it did anger me for him to go there. I did understand as I got older why he did it. As again, maturity is a great learning tool, especially when it comes to careers and like. But Pete Carroll, I feel for you because you're a Seahawk man, and Pete Carroll is to me more of a Seahawk than a Jet or a Pat
Absolutely.
or a Patriot
Absolutely.
or a Raider
Look,
coach.
I consider Pete Carroll to be a Seahawk like I consider Mike Holmgren to
Yeah, I get that. I get that.
That was a tiny dig at you there.
I stole Mike from the Packers there. But anyways,
So, no, I feel bad for Pete Carroll. I mean, and the big question is, does this tarnish a reputation? Yes, it does. The same way Belichick. This is tarnishing his reputation, but what's a worse ding to his rep? dating a 27-year-old where he's taking all these personal jabs, including at, at Tom Brady's retirement. I mean, and or host, being a coach of a college program. Hoodie obviously that lacks the patience, to recruit would be my guess. People flocked there because at first it's like, oh, I get to play under, a Hall of Fame coach. But then at some point, nobody wants to be, 2-8.
Well, what I can see, and I'm confident I could say this with I can say this with confidence. I think a lot of the guys that went there, and a lot of parents, and a lot of high school coaches that sent their guys to UNC, are saying, "Wow, this is a bad mistake." And my guys I sent there, my sons that I sent there, are really being stunted for their playing career, for a chance to play in the NFL, because Belichick is so dysfunctional there, and he's basically disinterested in what's going on. As much as he's trying to, sell something, it's a joke. It's really a joke.
It's tough.
That's bad for, because again, North Carolina takes their football seriously. The whole state, you got a big state here with a lot of colleges that play college football, and it is a tradition-based football program. You can't do what you're doing with it and disrespect it the way Belichick is doing it. And I'm not afraid to say it. I mean, that's the way I feel about it. I know a little about football too, as much as Belichick is. Obviously, I'm not a coach like him or anything like that, but still, he's really tarnished his reputation badly, as
It's
far as.
tough. So, well, the NFL exercised their flex option. We were all laughing that there was a 10 a.m. Pacific time game, Seattle and San Francisco, to decide the number one seed in the NFC. We're kind of laughing about that. And a couple days ago, I'm like, the NFL should flex that to be the Sunday night game. And they did the other way around. They flexed it and made it the Saturday night game. So needless to say, we are throwing a big party on Saturday night at the Squire's house to watch the Seahawks defeat the lowly 49ers and move on to grab the number one seed. It's pretty interesting. Whoops. Sorry, I've got the standings here. I mean, I can't remember the last time it came down to the last week of the season to decide the
I
number
don't
one.
think it for Seattle in the past. I'm pretty sure this is the first time. They're in the playoffs one way or the other, correct?
Yes,
Obviously. Yeah,
yeah,
so.
because of the record, but I mean, it's a big difference. We would go from winning the game, we'd be a number one seed, first week by home field advantage. You lose it, and you become a wild card seed. You're the number five. You are just another wild card, and suddenly you are on the road, facing every division winner. I mean, it's so funny because you can look at like, oh, where is it? Hang on, I have a couple windows up here. You can look at everyone's standings, and in the just a second, sorry. So, I mean, if you. I can remember years ago, the Seahawks won the division at, I think it was a 16, 10, I mean, it was like, was it 8-8 or was it 7-9? And we were the first time in history a team won the division with a losing record. And because we are the division winners, we had home field advantage. And in comes somebody like the Packers, who's, whatever, 12-4, and they destroyed us. And it was just funny. So, I mean, home field advantage for the division winner is just, to me, is just kind of an antiquated thing. You know what I
But
mean?
it is what it is. And again, like we were talking beforehand, there's only in the AFC whether Pittsburgh or Baltimore will end up there. And I got a feeling Pittsburgh's going to end up because they want Rodgers to play at least the playoff game. And then in the NFC, the Carolina Panthers have a chance to win the division over the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Yep.
And again, nobody thought Carolina was, and I personally did not think Carolina would make this far being a 500 team. But Young has definitely improved dramatically overnight,
Totally.
which is nice to see. And the Bucks, unfortunately, have been hampered with a lot of different issues there. So it'll be interesting to see whoever wins it How long can they possibly last in the playoff? To me, the Packers do not look well right now at all. And
Everybody's their team's own worst critic. I mean, to me, I don't want to face the Packers. The Packers always play well. Doesn't
well,
matter.
to me, they had a golden opportunity to do something last whatever Saturday when they played. And they just looked. To me, I mean, it was a runoff game more than anything else. They couldn't get anything going. So it is what it is.
Yeah, that Bears 49ers game. Did you watch that? The
Yeah,
Packers
I
just
got.
won. Obviously, I was rooting for the Bears, Red Grange legacy there, but also the Bears beat the 49ers and the Seahawks wrap up the number one seed. Even if we lose, because we'd be a game up. But I mean, that came down to that. That was a great game. That was fun to watch.
Exactly.
Well, been some good football on, but. Yeah, it's interesting. 11-5 Bears, 9-6 Pack. I mean, you're not even going to make the playoffs at 9-6, are you?
No, we're the last playoff team.
Yeah, because
We have the tie. Yeah,
even if
we
the
have the tie.
49ers lose, they would be 12-5. They'd be
Yeah.
three games up. So
Yeah.
also weird, the NFC West will likely have three teams
Right.
in the playoffs, a
Right.
division winner and both wild cards.
Right.
49ers are 12-4. Rams are 11-5 after losing to the Falcons last night.
Yeah.
So I
And
mean,
that was an interesting game last night too. So I mean
yeah.
it's interesting. As I say, on any given
Anything said
Thursday,
it, but yeah, it's interesting. I mean,
Sunday.
three teams from one division in the playoffs. That's I boy, the NFC West has become a really tough division,
It has. All
So,
right. We're going to move on because our special
ooh,
guest is here.
we are
And
ready.
I got to introduce him. Our special guest tonight is a retired high school principal and former football coach. He's a member of the Pro Football Researchers Association, has authored articles for the Coffin Corner, Gridiron Greats Magazine, and some coaching magazines. He has published one book on high school administration. He lives with his wife Joan in California, and I'd like to welcome to our show Mr. Ben Carpenter. Ben, thanks for coming on.
Thank you, Bob and Joe. I've seen your podcast before, and I always thought it'd be kind of interesting to do a podcast. And then you sent me an email out of the blue. I was walking home from the gym. I can't believe Bob Swick. So
You're the one who watched it. I love it. Thank you.
it's the karma. We send out the message, and people pick up on it. It's a
That's Mr. Bob Swick, by the
Okay, Mr. Joe Squires.
Ben. No, I'm just a co-host. I'm just Joe.
All right, Ben, can you tell our audience how you became interested in football and leading off?
Okay, I'm originally from Fairbanks, Alaska, born and raised in Fairbanks, Alaska. And football, my parents weren't athletic. They were business people. They had a dry cleaners right outside of Fairbanks, just about a quarter of a mile outside of town. And there was it was kind of a little business strip, and we lived there at that place. And my friends down the road, their dad had a battery shop. But as boys, we would go out and play around. And one day, there was this warehouse at this old abandoned lumber company, and we had gone over there to ride our bikes around in this warehouse. And my dog, Jacqueline, this German Shepherd we had, she came in, and as boys are riding these bikes around in this big warehouse, I mean, that was pretty cool. She kept getting in the way. So I opened the door, I put her out, I said, "Jacqueline, go home," close the door. A little bit later, my mom came over and knocked on the door and said, "Jacqueline's been hit by a car. She got hit by a car crossing the street." I was devastated. We rushed her to the vet. She died, and I was just devastated. Well, a few hours later, a woman that my mom knew, they lived out at North Pole, which is about 13 miles out of Fairbanks. She had two boys, David and Daryl, and my mom told her, she said, "Well, why don't you let her come home with us? Let him come home with us for the weekend. He can play with Dave and Daryl," and I knew them, and maybe it'll get his mind off of it. So I go home with them, and we're just 10, 12-year-old boys running around in the yard, and one of them said, "Hey, let's play football." And I said, "I don't know anything about football." And
Wow.
so they said, "Well, here's what we'll do. There were three of us. I'll hike it to you. He's going to defend me. I'm going to run out, catch the pass. You try to throw it. So we did that a couple of times, and all of a sudden it was like, holy crap, this is the greatest freaking game in the world.
It is.
And I thought, man, your strategy and all that. So that was the moment that summer in 1969 in Fairbanks, Alaska, that I fell in love with football after a tragic story.
Wow. Holy mackerel.
I was hoping that story would get better after your dog got hit. I'm sorry to hear that.
And then I got into football and went downhill from there.
Yeah. Did you play football?
You know, football. Yeah. Well, football in Alaska, they had some college football for a little while in the 40s. And by the way, Bob, you've got an article coming that way on Alaskan football, college football.
Okay.
In Alaska. So Greg has it right now, Greg Tranter. But no, they started football in 1970, youth football in 1970. So I was the first kid to sign up for it. And I was on a team and I played, but I wasn't real big. When I was a freshman in high school, I was only 4'11 and weighed 89 pounds. And thankfully I grew. I'm now a regular sized guy now. But I started coaching when I was very young with the youth football team. And that's then cool. I got into coaching after that. And, you know, the rest is history.
So you were the punter. All right. Well, obviously, I'm at we have a house in Eastern Oregon. I mentioned I'm in Sisters, Oregon. So I have a little bit of backdrop envy. I collect football cards. My wife collects art. So this is a ZZ way. I've got a little bit of backdrop envy between you and Bob. Bob always has an amazing backdrop. Some Steve Largent cards, some 89 Pacific Largent wax packs, and some other stuff on the Packers, I think. But I mean, look at your library back there. That is, seriously, I've seen like podcasts where pro football players come on and they don't have a library like that. You're missing a Walter Payton Man of the Year award, and you're right up there with like a Jerry Rice or something. But I mean, seriously, look at that. You've got lights above it. Just that's beautiful. I mean, it's okay. Massive. How did you get into, I mean, it's like you mentioned coaching, but how'd you get into it? How the hell do you get a book collection that size and organize it? Yeah, that's impressive.
Well, it all started with my first football book. For today, I've got right about 2,600. I just ordered some, so I'll be over 2,600 by January 3rd. I think they're coming in. But what happened was I fell in love with football, and I just wanted to learn about it. I started reading about it in the paper. I subscribed to Sports Illustrated, Sporting News, Football Digest. But in the fifth grade, my teacher passed out one of those Scholastic book forms. So I bought How to Star in Football by Herman Mason. It's the first football book I ever bought.
The bookmobile thing?
The bookmobile? Oh, I read this thing a million times.
Oh, that's... It's got the that, is that... Is that your original book that you bought?
This is my original book that I bought when I was 10 years old. I found one place that I underlined in there that said, to be a good quarterback, you must have confidence and discipline. I underlined that one part. So that was my first book. And once my mom found out I was a football fanatic, everything I got for Christmas and birthday was football. So then Santa Claus brought me my first punt, pass, and kick like.
Oh, my gosh.
And she got me three or four for Christmas. And you had to order them out of the Sears catalog because it's in Fairbanks, Alaska. They didn't have a lot of bookstores, and they'd go pick them up at the pickup store. Cool. So over time, she probably had about half of them had given to me for presents. And so I finally bought the full series. So I have the full series of the Pump, Pass, and Kick. And then as I got older and was reading more adult stuff, all I could afford was softbound books. So. Yeah. So I've got Joe Namath, Can't Wait Until Tomorrow, because I get better looking every day. Lombardi, More Lombardi, Out of Their League by Dave Megacy. Instant Replay, When All the Laughter Died in Sorrow. So I'm in high school, and I've got a reading class. I don't know why they put me in a reading class, but the job was, as a student, just go in and sit and read for an hour. Wow. So I read through all these books. I had to have gotten an A in citizenship because I just sat in the corner and never said a word, and I just read. So then to acquire more books because of the limited bookstores in Alaska, Sports Illustrated, you may remember this, Sports Illustrated came out with a book club, the Sports Illustrated Book Club. So yeah. I signed up and I got the game that was Larry Merchant's Every Day You Take Another Bite, the gray flannel pigskin. And I never threw anything away. I never misplaced them. They went on a shelf. They were cared for. They were curated. And then everybody just started buying me, buying football books for me, birthday, Christmas. And every once in a while, I open a book and see what was given to me, you know, love mom and dad, love your sister, those kinds of things. So it just kind of grew for there, went on to college, and I'd stop in old bookstores. I found one book. Let me see where I just had it here. Anyway, it's it's a book by about Oklahoma football. Inside, it's got Larry Lacewell, Barry Switzer, Galen Hall, the Selma brothers all signed it. And I just had it here. Anyway, so that was how I got started. And then the collection just grew. By the time I got out of high school, I probably had a couple of hundred books. By the time I got out of college, I probably had 500 or 600 books, 1,000 books, and it just started growing. Then when I got a real job, I traded out the paperbacks for hardbacks. So all those paperbacks, I now have them in hardback. I put them in the Mylar covers to protect them. They're all on an Excel spreadsheet. and I keep it on my phone. So if I go into a bookstore, do I have that one? I know most of them, but I'll pull it out. And the collection just grew and grew.
2,600 only football books. So
only football, no other subject, just American football.
No business books, no great game of business, no E-Myth, no nothing. All football.
No. All football, 100%.
And you didn't do anything with CFL football?
I do have a couple of CFL football books.
Okay.
I think I have one or two. Along that line, I found, and so I look for crazy books. I found this book. This is crazy. That's Japanese. The entire book is written in Japanese.
Wow.
It is the history of American football in Japan.
In Japan? That's
I've so never funny. Been able to read it until AI came out. Now I can take a picture of the pages. Yeah, and it will translate them for me. They were playing football in Japan in 1934. It stopped for the war. And then in 1946, they resumed it. They had college football in Japan.
Yep.
So I'm getting ready to write. I saw this, you know, I dug it up, and I'm going to probably start writing an article on football in Japan.
do you reread books? Because, I mean, like, I will go back and read business or football books every couple of years. I'll just see it on the shelf and be like, oh, that was a good one. Let me reread it. And then I like to take notes in my books. I'll underline things or circle them or do things. And it fascinates me when I go back through a book and like 8 years later, and I'm like, oh, I underlined that. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, 2,600, you probably can't, but yeah.
You know, a lot of the books, there are books that you read. A lot of the books are reference books, like the Encyclopedia of Football. Clausen's Encyclopedia of Football. Books that are nothing but data. So I've got a whole collection of those up on my library. They sit up on some of those.
God. You have a stunning office, by the way, Ben. That woodwork is amazing.
Wow.
Thank you. When we moved into the house, I had this one room design, and my wife says, "What are all these shelves for?" I said, "My football books." She didn't know I had all these books in storage as I was moving around, and then boom, we filled it up.
She didn't know you had. How long have you been married?
24 years now.
Okay,
but I got divorced, and in that transition, I just had everything in storage. So we moved in, and all these boxes started coming in. And at that time, when we moved in 20 years ago, I probably had about 1,500 or so.
Okay,
yeah.
Wow! All right, $1,000 question here. What are your 6 top books?
I was thinking about that. So I've kind of got them in classifications. I've got the books that would be important to collectors, and then those that are important to my heart. So I'm going to kind of break this down a little bit. I think every serious collector has to have Walter Camp's first book ever published on the game, first hardbound book ever published on the game.
I haven't read that in years. That's a great one. I love it.
Yeah, it is phenomenal. And somebody put some little notes in the back of it.
Oh, that's the best.
The next one I think is critical. This is the second book. It came out in 1893. It's James Church's Football. And it's really, it was the first book that had photographs in it.
Right, right. Wow.
Followed that was Alonzo Stagg. Stagg's book. It was really the first one with plays. And so that is the T formation.
Yeah.
That's one of the first formations. And that's where we get, in case you don't know, where we get the names of our backfield players. Because the fullback was considered the full distance back from the center. The halfbacks were half the way, and the quarterback wasn't under the center. Then he was actually quarter of the way back.
Right.
So I did not know that.
A lot of people do not know that.
I did not know that.
I brought that up. I really am. Because again,
holy moly.
That's where it came from. And of course, the ends were called ends because they were on the end. Yeah. The tackles were called tackles because that's where defense made most of their tackles, off tackle. And the guards called guards to protect the center because he had his head down, he's trying to snap the ball. I think the next one is Camp and Dielen's book, 96.
Okay.
And then, so these really are the first four books in the history of the game that were published. Following that, in terms of coaching, is Fielding Yost's book. And this is 1905. This book is, I couldn't believe it's in such phenomenal condition when I got it. Mm. But this is the first book that had practice plans, practice pictures, guys playing the game. And again, the T formation comes up there again. And they've got the guy in the T formation. So
a young Lombardi probably read that.
Probably so.
And then made it perfect.
So that one is in terms of coaching. I think this one, this bibliography by DeGrosa. DeGrosa was a coach, but he created the first bibliography. Right. And he wrote this in 1935. The next bibliography wasn't written until Grobani wrote it in 1975. So there's a 40-year lapse between these two books.
All right. Refresh my memory again. And how many books were in each in 35 that were listed approximately, and then in 75?
Well, 75, he lists 1,750.
All right, okay, all right.
DeGrosa, his is probably more like 700, I think.
Okay, I was going to say it was about 1,000 book difference in the 40 years.
Yes.
Ben, you knew that number right off the top of your head, 1,000, by the way.
I did.
There was, and correct me if I'm wrong, this is a little off script, but in the 2010s or the early 2000s, was there another book that came out that made an attempt to list all the different football books?
Hickok, who's a member of the PFRA, Pro Football
Research Association,
he came out with one, a very good book, and because a lot of these bibliographies are so convoluted with every other thing, it's hard to find. Hickok did a great job on his because they're so easy to follow. It's just so easy to go through and highlight. He's got them categories. His is probably as good a bibliography as these other two. And then he came up with a couple of supplements. So I've got all of those. I've got every bibliography on the game. So
I vaguely remember seeing the Hickok one, and I was going through it, and I said to myself, "Is this complete?" I mean, and again, I can't believe anybody could have a complete bibliography of all the books written. You know, considering especially today, there's got to be at least 100 to 200 titles coming out every year. You know,
and they figure it's a couple of hundred to come out every year. Right. Hickok estimates. When he wrote his first one, that there were probably about 10,000 books at that time. And now it could be about 12,000 books.
1,000. Okay.
Yeah. Something like that.
Somewhere between my figure was 10 to 15,000 books. That's why I figured. I know. Yeah. And 15 being obviously the high end, 10,000 being the low end. And for a little while, probably 20 years ago, when I was writing for another publication, I tried to do some research on it, but I couldn't come up with enough information. Everything was just too, every which way with it. So,
yeah. And there are some books that are so niche to a community. Like I picked up a book not long ago, a little town in Illinois, a little tiny town. It's probably not even a spot on a map. this husband and wife did a history of their high school football team.
Okay. Yep.
I mean, it is so obscure, it's not going to be anywhere. Right. You know, and so those kind of books get missed and they fall through the cracks. And I love finding those things. Yeah. I absolutely love it.
Ben, did you use these old bibliographies as kind of a checklist for
your
collection? Okay.
I do. Also, when I get a book and I'm doing research on something, I'll go through and I always look at the bibliography. I'll go down through and say, okay, I don't have that one. I've heard of that one and that sort of thing. So I absolutely do. Cross-check.
How do they do it? I haven't looked at those bibliographies. I mean, are they by year? Are they by topic? Are they by alphabetically? Or
yeah, and they'll do them different ways. They'll sometimes just publish a college team. They'll have like a college bibliography and have all the teams listed and all the books that have been published.
Oh,
that
gotcha.
Kind of thing. So here was another important book, and this is a book that is nearly impossible to find. I've got a good friend who's got about 500 books, and he said, "Do you have this book?" He came over one day. We're going to. I said, "Yeah, I happen to have it." This is The Modern T Formation with Man in Motion, and it's written by Clark Shaughnessy, who was at Stanford then, George Hollis, and Ralph Jones. This was the manual they put together in the late 30s, and this is the exact offense that the Bears beat Washington 73-0 in the 1940 championship game. And the unique thing about it, it's got this plastic claw binding, and this is actually a manual. It was so that coaches could take it onto the field.
Oh, wow.
Coaches could use it in that respect. So when you start talking about the history of the game, which is what I really like, everything connects. Because go back to the T formation from that I was just showing you from 1895. Here we are in 1940 with the T formation. You know, it went away for a while. So those right there are probably the top books for collectors. But I can't get away without showing this. Christy Walsh was Babe Ruth's, he was Babe Ruth's agent, really.
Yeah.
He was one of the top sports writers of the time. He was also, he wanted to be an artist. When he would sign books to friends, he would create artwork. So here is this book signed by Christy Walsh with his own artwork in there.
Wow.
That's an incredible find right there.
So he freehand sketched that in that book.
Yes.
And every book will have a different one?
Well, only if he gave it. He would do it for personal friends.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. And then he had the card. So here was a real cool connection. Jesse Harper, who was Notre Dame's coach, he coached Gus Duray and Newt Rockne in the upset with Army. And this is a book it's very common now. You can get it, but it shows pictures of Jesse Harper on his ranch.
Okay.
And that was where he would go to get away, just to get away and go to his ranch in Kansas. So I was scouring the eBay about 20 years ago, and I came across this big book that Christy Walsh had edited. And it's the Intercollegiate Football 1869 to 1934. And a bunch of supplements were written on this for the following years. But this book right here was a gift from Christy Walsh to Jesse Harper. It says, for my friend Jesse Harper, who's done a lot for football, sincerely. And it's got a picture of them standing at Harper's Ranch.
Wow.
So if the house were on fire, this is the first thing I think I would go for. I would not sell this for $100,000.
What a find. Did you know that was personalized like that when you bought it?
The guy had a description on it, and I'm looking at it, and I think I'm just going to be like $500. I got it for $100.
Wow.
20 years ago. So I mean,
he just had a random photo of the inscription on the inside. Didn't know who it was. Yeah. Oh, wow.
I don't know what he knew because he sold other football books. But when I saw that, I couldn't push that button fast enough. So anyway, that's just another, you know, real cool thing that I found in that particular book.
Absolutely.
I know you guys have other questions, so I'll slow down because
you broke that into two categories. One, for professional researchers and one personal. So, I mean, most of those books, you're like, this is, good for the history of the game. You brought up the first book you ever bought at the bookmobile. I mean, on the personal side, is that probably like my favorite football card is an autographed Steve Largent card my sister got me for Christmas in 1999, because that got me back into football. It's worth $10, but it's one of my most prized cards.
Oh, yes.
So
And I'm the same way with my first book.
is
I've
that
got a
first
display
book?
case. Yeah. I've got a display case with a big glass top, and it is in that. So that's where I keep the Walter Camp's first book and my first book.
So when people are like, what's this one? You're like, that's the first book I ever bought when I was, 10 years old at a bookmobile in Alaska.
That's exactly right.
That kickstarted everything here on the shelves you see.
Everything.
Oh,
That
God,
was
I
it.
love that. I
Wow.
absolutely love that. You just gave me goosebumps, Ben. That's great.
Like, it's interesting because I always loved books, and I always loved, being a child of the 60s growing up. I would buy paperback books like you, and because they were cheap, 25 cents, 35 cents, 50 cents, or whatever. And I do have a lot of my paperback books that I had when I was a kid, so on and so forth. One question for you too, again a little off topic. Professional Football Researchers Association, which we're both members of, they've have published a lot of very, very small, perfect bound, like 5x8 books over the years. And I know they put a call out if anybody had any of them, they would like them, because family members have been asking about the book, so on and so forth. Curious, do you own any of those books, Ben?
I have a number of books from PFRA guys. It's McFarland Press
Yeah.
prints a lot of it.
Talk about the ones that they self-published back in the early 90s,
You know,
80s.
I may, they're all listed by author, and I may have a book, but I don't know. But right off the bat, I can't think of any from that far back.
I know the ones that they've been putting out in the series, like the new one with the 65 Bills. They put one out on the Rams, so on and so forth. So, but I was just curious about that because those are pretty obscure topics that they wrote about, and they really didn't publish a lot of them. I have about a half a dozen of them. I'll have to get you the titles, but I know they're out of print and they're tough to find. And I know the PFRA was asking if any members had it, and they didn't want them to ship them back to them. They were going to give them to family members for that. And that's what makes to me books exciting now, is because so many people self-publish them, like through an Amazon or whatever. So there's a lot more titles now than there's
Yeah,
ever been,
a lot easier.
to the old days where you had maybe 20, 30 titles, real big titles a year, compared to now a couple hundred books,
Right,
instead.
right. And some
Lighter.
of those get left off of the bibliographies, the books.
Well, Ben,
Unbelievable.
you had an amazing story about, nuggets, just the nuggets of gold you found on eBay. Do you have any other interesting stories, just in your march to 2,600 books?
Sure. So there was a bookstore that I used to go to, and they always had a good selection of books. So they were going out of business, and I stopped by and I said, "Do you have any books on the shelf that that are not on the shelf?" And the guy says, "Yeah, there's a bookcase in the back." So I go to the back and I see this. A guy unlocks it for me, and I open it up, and it is autographed to Ben. And I go, "Wait, that's me!" And it says, "To my friend Ben, fight on to a good and grateful Trojan. Peace to you, O.J. Simpson." So I found this book by O.J. Simpson autographed to a guy named Ben. So I mean, that was one I had to have.
I thought you were going to open
That's
it up
cool.
and it was going to say, "Yes, I killed them," signed OJ.
No. Another one is this book by American Football by Weyand. And when I got it, it actually came with the photographs that are
Oh,
published inside the book.
holy moly,
Oh,
that's
wow.
cool. Those are
So,
good photos
wow.
too.
Yeah. Oh,
You
it's
know
an
how hard it
excellent
is
book.
back in the old days to catch a football mid-air like that and not have it be blurry. That's a great photo.
And then here's one with Percy Houghton leading the team on the field. And here is the actual photograph of that book. So that was kind of a cool find, a cool thing there.
God, that's
There's
cool.
one where I was looking for this book. I couldn't find it anywhere. Anatomy of a Game. This book is nothing but a history of the rules. It starts with the original rules of the game, and it goes all the way through. It's just about the rules. I couldn't find it anywhere. So I found out who the publisher was, and I remember it's kind of vague. I called him. I sent him. It wasn't an email. I think I actually called, and I said, I'm looking for this book. And the guy says, well, it's been out of print a while. He says, but we may have one in the warehouse. Let me go check.
Oh my.
He calls me back and I says, I found two. I said, I'll take them both.
Oh, wow.
So I use this one for my research. It's all tabbed up. You can see. And the other ones, the other one is on the top of my shelf there. So that's how it took. That's the story behind that book.
That's so cool. That had to be a while ago, because you know, to get that kind of effort from someone you call up is pretty unique.
Yeah, it was really cool. When I was coaching, I was in Alaska. I was coaching at North Pole High School, and we were playing a team to get into the playoffs, and they were the number one team, and there's a whole story behind that. But I said, I need something a little different I want to put in this week. So I went to my coach's book, and by the way, this whole shelf you see right there all the way down,
yeah,
those are all coaching books just like this. And published and really printed. So I've got over 200 books on this. But the guy, Popman or Simonton, he wrote a book. He wrote a chapter. It's only 4 pages, called The Two Center Formation. And it's it's actually, they have two centers. They have a guard in the middle and two centers, and you shift your line one way or another. So we built our game plan around that, and we beat these guys 20-6 and went on to win the championship that year. I came from this book right here, that idea. So
that's so funny.
I mean, I can go on and on. This one here, this is a great book, hard to find. You dropped it, you pick it up. It's a detailed history of the Georgia Tech Cumberland game where they beat Cumberland 222-0.
Yeah.
So that is just a fascinating thing. Heisman did it because he was upset because they beat him in a baseball game, and he said, all right, screw you. You ran up the score. We'll get you in football. Here's another really cool one. 1985, using the personal computer for offensive scouting. And it's got these guys loading old floppy disks on there. And here's a floppy disk picture. I mean,
I remember those.
Like the original computer scouting book. So, here's another quick one. Ben Agajanian, I was coaching the kickers at Long Beach State University before their program folded. And Ben Agajanian lived in Long Beach. So I got his number and address, and I went over and I had lunch with him and his wife, and he signed this book to me. Ben Agajanian, Kicking the Football.
Does that say, to Ben, please stop stalking me? do you read all these? Because you're picking up a lot of books. So you find this odd book, and do you sit down and read them all, or is it more about the acquisition? Is it more about like, got it, let me put it on a shelf?
Kind of both. But like here's one. This is crazy. You know, we all know the Sandusky story. He was Jerry Sandusky, one of the greatest renowned linebacker coaches in America. Everything was going great at Penn State. And then the whole scandal came out. Yeah. So I said, wait, I've got a Sandusky book. I go up and get this book after his big molestation thing came out. You can't make this up. The name of his book is.
Oh, Jesus. God, that's.
You can't make that up. And
in
the book is pictures of him standing with the boys in his house. I'm telling you, I got that out. I said, no way. You can't make that up. So then I started.
In the movie industry, they call that foreshadowing.
Yes. Well, then what I did, I mean, and I do this too. This is just to supplement the books. And I don't know, one day somebody's going to inherit all this or donate it. They're going to have supplements. I also created these. I cut out every single article that came out in the newspaper in California on the Sandusky thing. Okay. So this right here just chronicles all. This is kind of a side thing I do. So I put my own notes in. I've got two full scrapbooks.
Bob, this is the first time we've had both OJ and Jerry Sandusky mentioned in the same podcast.
This one right here is very expensive. They're kind of hard to find, but they're These run on the internet $600-$700. Bill Walsh did not like the book.
Right.
So they only published 3,600 copies, 36,000 copies. He didn't right. like it. And I was trying to get all through because I got a bunch. This is the first history of pro football.
Yes.
And it's pro football's ups and downs. And they blame, they say, well, he tried to take credit for being, you know, Braylor being the first. But I went back and read it, and it says one of the first. So, but there are some inaccuracies. He wrote it from memory, but he considers himself the father of American football. But, right. or not American, but pro football. But he right. even started his own league. When he had a falling out with the owners, he started one of the All-American Football Conferences.
Right, right.
Let me see real quick. Let me see. So I just wrote an article not long ago. It was on the analytics in football. So in doing my research, I found The Hidden Game of Football by Bob Carroll. This yep. is phenomenal. Yep. When it first came out, it was just a joke. People just dismissed it. Yep. They thought this is ridiculous. And then it kind of gained resurgence. But I got into it when Belichick was talking about analytics and how yeah. he was calling plays, you know, going forward on fourth down that time, and he was really criticized. So yeah. he mentioned Romer. So I went online and I found the dissertation from which it came, and it's titled, "It's Fourth Down, What Does the Bellman Equation Say?" And I printed it off, and then I went to Kinko's and put it in a hardbound issue. So I kind of made my own book out of his dissertation.
That's cool.
Wow. So anyway, I could go on and on, guys, and you may have a few more questions. I don't know, but
couple quick things for our listeners. The new issue of Gridiron Greats is at the printer. It's going to be out hopefully over the next week, 10 days. Ben's collection is featured in this upcoming magazine, and I already got a lot of good feedback from a few people who read the PDF version of the article. I was just blown away when I got it. Greg sent it to me, Greg Trantner, and I'm reading it. And I mean, my mouth is open. I'm saying, I can't believe what I'm reading. I can't believe somebody has that and has actually been able to, you know, actually show it, number one, and yeah. to share the information on it. So given that, are you actively looking for any books you're actively looking that you got to have for that collection? What's on
yes.
a one?
Yes, there are. Before I go, I almost forgot this. This is Weeb Eubanks' actual playbook from when he was with the Cleveland Browns. And I've wow. got all three of them for his 3 years that he was there. And they are all in his handwritten notes.
Wow.
And when wow. I found this, it was like, what in the heck? And I've got the flyer from the auction in which the guy got it. But the whole book is just wow. because Paul Brown used playbooks differently. He didn't just hand out the plays. He gave right. them empty books and they had to write them out. Coaches too. Wow. So right. I've got three full books of just Cleveland Browns history. Amazing. So anyway, that's my personal, my Herman Mason book, How to Star, and the other. It's tough to know which one is my favorite. In terms of books I'm looking for, I am looking for Walter Camp's Facts and Figures from 1894. It was a book they put together to talk about injuries and that sort of thing. I found a CD a guy was selling. I bought the CD. I printed it out, and I made my own book in a binder like this. So I've got this copy printed from that, but I'm looking for that book, Belichick's scouting book. Finding the first edition is impossible. There was a reprint, so I got a couple of the reprint that looked just like it. So Belichick's scouting book is very hard to find. The third one I'm actively looking for now is by Mark Malby. It's The Origins of Professional Football from 1890 to 1920. Again, an impossible book to find. So those three, I've searched the internet I can't find them anywhere, but if I do, I will.
Ben, you said you got a lot of these for Christmas and your birthday. I'd let Santa know those are the ones you're after, and who knows?
Well, the problem is Santa's not going to bring them because my wife is saying, yeah, you get these two bookcases out of the guest room and we don't have any more books left, any more room left. So,
did we lose him?
I think we lost him. Okay.
Oh, yeah, he'd frozen there for a minute, but his audio was good. But we'll see if he rejoins. Wow.
I'd like.
Isn't his excitement contagious? I mean, he's watching and he's talking. I'm getting goosebumps about some of the stories about how he found stuff and the personality of it. And it's just contagious. The way he's talking, he's excited, he's passionate about it. I love that. That's just, it doesn't matter what you collect if you're passionate about it. It's amazing.
Exactly.
Okay. I lost you guys for a few minutes. Can you I'm back, I think.
Now,
Okay.
we were just talking about how passionate you are about your collection and how it's just absolutely contagious, Ben. It's amazing. So, quick question. I mean, you've thrown up a lot of books here. I mean, and they say your sense of smell, it takes the most memory. Some of those books, I can smell them through the screen. I just know what they smell like. And if you have allergies and you open some of these books, the dust, it just yeah. I mean, am I barking up the right tree?
Yeah, they do have the book smell, but it's a
The
great
book
book
smell.
smell. Yeah, it's a great book smell. Not like a sweaty locker room, but it's a good
An
smell.
old book smell and a little bit of dust when you close it real fast.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, taking care of those books. I mean, I assume you don't have a big window opposite of that bookshelf that, puts a lot of sunlight on them. I mean, I've bought old newspapers from the 20s and 30s, and they just crumble in your hands if you don't take care of them.
Right. Well, I've got three little rooms. I got two windows on the side, but I keep the blinds closed. So this room stays dark 24/7. Occasionally I'll open it up, but it stays dark 24/7 unless I'm in here with my lights on and studying and researching. The neat thing about having a library like this, I'm right now I'm in a bigger project. I'm writing a book about Elmer Leyden. And so I probably got about 25 books on my couch over here that I've got, and I can just use them as a resource. I use the internet for basically the newspaper articles and stuff, but I can just go pick Burt Bell's book off the shelf and see what he said. Take Rooney's book off the shelf. Take Hallison's book and see what they wrote about. I just ordered Arch Ward's to get his perspective on it, and it just came the other day. So,
Nice.
yeah, it's a. And my question is, I always wonder, does somebody out there have a bigger collection? I'd love to meet them, just big collections. I've got a friend in Georgia who's got one, well, George Buzica. George, he told me he had about 1,000.
Rookie, those are rookie numbers.
so anyway, it's a passion.
Yes.
I just like to preserve history. Everything is connected. I can pick up one book and it'll mention somebody, and there's another book here
Oh, man.
that's connected to it. Here's an obscure one, Root Hogger Die by Tim
Oh.
Murillo. He was one of the assistant coaches with Webb Eubank on Paul Brown's staff. The guy was in the NFL for decades, and it's this kind of a self-published book. You can find it, but it's kind of rare. Yeah, gosh, I mean, here's a That football. This is one of the first fiction books for boys that came out. This was published in 1890. It's got an inscription inside. It was published, I think, in 1904, 1804, or 1894. I'm sorry. And Walter Camp wrote fiction for
Yes,
boys. These
absolutely.
were what shaped the literary world for boys at that time. They're like Horatio Alger football books.
Ben,
Oh,
I think
exactly.
our listeners really want to know if you have any books on Steve Largent, the Hall of Fame wide receiver for the Seattle Seahawks.
I believe I do. I believe I have. I believe I have his book.
It's probably in that display case right behind you, the one for your first book.
I got a lot of my player bios in the other room on those bookshelves.
Okay, gotcha. We'll allow it, but that should be front and center next podcast you do with us.
I know I've got a Jim Zorn book in there. Oh, and I've got a Chuck Knox signed. I've got a signed Chuck Knox from a coaching clinic. I've got my signed Bill Walsh here. I've got him at a coaching clinic. And here's the last one. I mean, because I could go on forever. When I was coaching at Long Beach State, we flew out to Akron in the middle of the winter to play the Akron Zips. And Jerry Faust was coaching there at that point after Notre Dame. I took my book and we stood at the 50-yard line before the game when we were all just standing around BSing as coaches do. And he signed it October 22nd, 1988. Ben, best of luck with the 49ers. Great meeting you. God bless you, Jerry Faust. This was signed in the middle of the field.
Are you, Ben, are you kind of acquiescing the loss when you're asking the other coach for an autograph?
Well, it was so cold and it was drizzling. Half of our team was in the dugout wrapped. They had dugouts on this stadium and they were all bundled up. You're calling for a guy to go out and he's sitting in the dugout free. They beat us 40-0.
Wow. Ben, we're literally out of time. One last question. Any advice for somebody who wants to replicate what you've done here, a beginning collector in books?
Well, I think it's like collecting anything else. You find, you know, you get that first football card, that first jersey or whatever, and then you start looking for a connection and you go, you know what? I think I'll collect the team. And then, well, I think I'll get something older. So it's kind of like the books. My book started out as coaching books, how to and Lombardi and that. And then they just kind of branched out from there. And when I started seeing the connections, I'd get an interest. For example, I read an article about a guy signing a new contract and it mentioned the salary cap. Well, we all know about the salary cap, but we don't know how it works and what's really going on. So I went on and I found three books about the salary cap. One was for the layman, one was middle, and one's for freaking attorneys. So I just bought all three. Now I've got a salary cap collection within the library. So the library is just full of these different collections that I like I said, I want it for someday historical reference. Whoever ends up with this book, I hope it won't be sold off into pieces, but maybe I'll donate it to the Hall of Fame if they want. I'll donate it to somebody who wants it. I don't know.
We'll see. I'm speechless, and we're out of time.
Well, Ben, if you want me to come back and do more, I'll be more than happy to do another niche on the books.
You're on. We're out of time completely. Joe, thanks for being on. I want to wish everybody a happy new year, and we'll be back next year, 2026, with our next show. Take care.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hey there, sports history fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude. And I hope that you enjoyed this recent episode presented by the Sports History Network and were able to learn some good old-fashioned sports history knowledge nuggets. I started the Sports History Network back in 2020 with the mission to help podcasters find a community of like-minded sports history nerds, as well as helping aspiring podcasters to start their own shows. We have a little bit over 30 shows on the network right now covering all sorts of sports history, but as far as I'm concerned, we're just at the toothpick in the ocean moment, you know, that can't even figure it out because there's so much more coming. We wanted to create the ultimate headquarters for sports yesteryear, starting with Podcast Network and our website, but we're going to continue to move into other mediums as well. And here's the cool part, because we want you to be part of our team. So if you're interested in starting your own podcast, or maybe being a guest on one of our shows, or who knows, maybe even writing an article for us over on the website. Seriously, all you got to do is reach out to us on the contact page over at sports.historynetwork.com. You can be as technologically savvy as a Neanderthal tapping on a stone trying to figure out this whole hieroglyphics thing back in the day. Again, it doesn't matter, because even if you don't understand the whole podcast space, we have a production team that can pretty much help you out with doing everything. All you gotta do, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com, head to the contact page, fill it out. That message goes right to me, and I'll reach out to you as soon as I can. But for now, dude, I'm through if you're through.